Well, hello again. Again, my name is Peter John Mitchell, and I'm research analyst with the IMFC. It's my pleasure to introduce our next speaker, and we'll be moving along. Be introducing Dr. Kelly Dean Schwartz. Dr. Schwartz has been with the research fellow with the Institute since 2006. He's the associate professor and director of the University of Calgary Applied Psychological Educational Services. And as a registered psychologist, Kelly began his career with the Calgary School Board, working extensively with children and adolescents with severe learning, social, and emotional needs. But before coming to U of C, he was on faculty at Ambrose University College for about 12 years and served as program head of behavioral sciences. And Kelly has maintained an active practice since 1996. I'm excited today by Kelly's presentation because he is releasing a new paper today, which you will get after the presentation. And the paper is called Parents in Control, Best Practices or Another Way to Be a Bad Parent. Well, I've had the opportunity to preview the paper, and I can say that Kelly has identified the cultural angst parents feel when it comes to raising children. And there's a lot of parenting books and television shows, and parents feel so much pressure to raise happy, healthy, and successful children. And Kelly has examined the academic trends in the study of parenting practices and provided thoughtful clarity. Well, I found that Kelly has always seems to find the right balance between academic inquisitiveness and practical reflection, all served with a pinch of quick wit. So I'm really looking forward to the next few minutes with Kelly Dean Schwartz.
Well, good afternoon. It's great to be with you. Been with you the entire day, and you can always tell your status in an organization by where they place you on the speaking schedule, and the 3 o'clock schedule is coveted, not by me personally, but by some it is coveted. I haven't found out who that is yet, but no, it is, you know, it's as I was sitting in the back listening and this is my third conference to be a part of, I'm just excited to be part of an organization that is really at the grassroots and trying to build something from the bottom up. And it's been a privilege to work with Dave and the staff at IMFC. And, you know, we come at this topic today, and again, I had to take a few minutes to collect myself after the last talk because I'm the father of 3 children, one of which is a 14-year-old girl, and you can see how good-looking I am. You can only imagine how good-looking she is, you know, so my heart starts to palpitate in these discussions, and I'm going to share with you actually at the closing some of the discussions I've had with my own daughter about this area of control and about this issue of again finding balance in being parents. And we tend to talk about the areas, at least I find this, that we tend to talk and do research about areas that we're most passionate about things that we're that resonate most closely with us. And I think this is certainly true in my case because even though you'll see listed that I have letters behind my name, really there should be 3 letters and a symbol, and the 3 letters should be dad and then a whistle, because really I'm masquerading as an academic and a researcher when my real purpose and role in life is to be a father and a coach. I love coaching kids. That's the other half of my life. In fact, I'm missing events of coaching to be here with you. The Adam 6 Scorchers in Calgary are missing me because of you, so I hope you feel somewhat guilty about that. But as I've spent the last few years working and living with families, it's come to my attention that both from, a personal perspective and a clinical perspective, we're dealing with a little bit different era of family functioning, certainly, than we ever had. And you've heard all the speakers today, particularly our first one this morning, talk about that change in culture. I want to, again, share with you... Whoops, going the wrong way. At least I think I'm going the wrong way. There we are. want to give you a couple of viewpoints from the two biggest areas of my life these days, that being from the bench, coaching hockey in the winter, and fastball, girls fastball in the spring and summer. Coaching a great little boy that I'll call Zach, 10 years of age, and this was his comment after our practice before our game last weekend, where he communicated, not for the first time, his anxiety about his parent finding out something about, you know, his personal performance or his behavior or his activities. And again, I find it a real privilege to be a coach. In fact, most of the research you'll read as far as sources of influence rank coaches very highly in that rank as far as influence. I give you another quote from a parent on a referral form for the clinic that I work at University of Calgary, where we see this angst, we see this constant anxiety, so not only amongst kids, but also amongst parents, that there is this almost performance anxiety to be the best kid and to be the best parent. And as I've looked at this from a clinical perspective, and again from my own personal perspective, it seems to be that we are, coming to understand that we should be doing something to help parents and help families understand more about the whole process that in turn will make them better parents and in turn make better kids. Just like all of our speakers today, in particular even Dr. Grossman at the end, they're talking about how the passion is to get science into practice. And really that is one of my passions as well. Dave and the crew know that. I'm always trying to figure out how do we get good science into the hands of people that make decisions and act upon this. And that's a constant passion of mine. I want to share with you before we get, this notion of control is one that that I find both exciting and challenging, because you've heard it already today, and in particular in our last talk here, the importance for kids to know about boundaries, that kids need to know about where things start and stop in all areas of life, particularly in sexuality, but in all areas, vocational, academic, athletic, peer relations, parent-child relationships, where are the boundaries in this? And this is not a new topic. In fact, we've been studying this for 30-plus years, starting at least all the way back to some work by Diana Baumrind that looks at parenting styles. And you'll see the four, in the quadratic there, the four different types of parents. The authoritative, or what's called the democratic parent. The authoritarian parent, which has high demands but is very unresponsive or non-responsive to the developmental and social needs of the child. Then we have an indulgent parenting, so low in expectation and control over the child, and very indulgent, very permissive in its parenting, giving the child whatever he or she needs according to whatever he or she wants, in essence. And then, of course, we're well acquainted with the neglecting parenting, because that falls into that clinical area of abusive parenting, where we see the rejective or unresponsive parent. And again, from a financial and fiscal perspective, that takes up a lot of our time. The key here is that we're not talking about perfect parents. We're not talking about seeking necessarily that we will do everything right all the time. And in fact, the more I understand myself as a parent, the more I find myself apologizing and asking for forgiveness than I do about making that first correct step or that great comment. None of us have those Bill Cosby moments where the light dims at just the right time and we have just that right sentence to say to our child. As I'm going to give evidence to that with my own daughter here in a few minutes, where you walk away going, where in the world did that come from? How did that come out of my mouth? I seem to be, you know, I've got a high school education. I should know better than this. Some more recent work, though, by Brian Barber, who is kind of the head of a small group of individuals doing some research on parental control. I hope you can see that that graphic. In essence, you can see the first bubble there, the support leading to social initiative, really stands out in correlation with that authoritative parenting style. That when we empower our children to make good decisions, when we give them the best information, when we have that type of close social relationship with our kids, to be able to have those hard talks and to be able to behaviorally demonstrate to our kids in ways that they trust us. We see good social initiative. Go down to the bottom one there, the behavioral control. That's a negative relationship in the sense that if we give up behavioral control of our children, we tend to see the antisocial behavior. And you heard that from Wade earlier this afternoon, talking about how important it is for us as fathers, but as parents in general, to give that behavioral control to our children, to provide that, to provide the boundaries. And if we don't, we tend to see, again, the increase in antisocial behavior. The one I want to talk to you today about, though, is a little bit, and again, this is quite strange for me because I'm a social developmental psychologist, and my area is really positive youth development. I want to talk about things that are right with families, about strengths and assets, and things that promote healthy development. And this is all leading to that. But as I said, out of my clinical practice and out of my work just literally on the fields and rinks in southern Alberta, I really find that we are somehow finding ourselves with children and parents who are in this cycle of anxiety about what am I supposed to do? Where am I, where do my parenting strategies lead me to the best outcomes with my kids? And so when we look at Barber's work in 2005, he produced a monograph for Society of Child Development, and he talks about this notion of how psychological control by parents is really finding roots in predicting a lot of the illness and, again, disruption as far as emotional and psychological functioning of children and youth, particularly in what we call the anxiety or depressive disorders. I want to show you, though, that part of this is, in answering this question, is first of all addressing, well, what do we mean by what's good enough kids? Continually surprised by how many parents that I talk to, again, just within my sphere of influence and contact, how many of us don't know what we want when we say we want to raise good kids, when we want to raise healthy kids? What do we mean by that? And in fact, there was a study that was published in 2008 by Alberta County Center for Child, Family, and Community Research that actually did a Alberta broad survey on asking parents about developmental markers for their children's development. When should they walk? When should they talk? When's healthy weight gain? When, writing abilities, pre-literacy, all that sort of thing. And what they found was that, surprisingly, a lot of parents don't have a general sense of what to look for in healthy development in their own children. Maybe you're not surprised by that, but I was. And what I've summarized here is, again, grossly summarizing, here are three characteristics that are generally widely accepted as being healthy developmental markers for children. One of those, well-known, we've been studying this for 40 or 50 years, that social-emotional bond, or what's known as attachment between parent and child. And we're very concerned about this in the sense that we know we've kind of undone all the myths about getting a child from the womb into the mother's arms within seconds or minutes, because if we don't, we're going to miss that attachment moment. We know that that's not the case anymore, and yet we're still very consumed by trying to understand what are the components that lead to a healthy parent-child attachment. And we know that one of the ways that we can identify this is how that child demonstrates attachments with other significant people in their lives, teachers, coaches, peers, and particularly some of the work that I did a couple years ago in friendships, and that kids that show the healthiest relationships with their friends actually are mirroring healthy relationships with their parents. There is that kind of extrapolation from parent-child attachment to other relationships, particularly in friendships. Another big one that we want for all of our kids is this, just under this umbrella of competence. That we want our kids to be socially competent. We want our children to be academically and have a healthy achievement competence. We want them to do their best and to work for their best. I remember the first time my son came out of the kindergarten class when I was waiting for him after school, and he was so excited to learn, and he ran out and his fly was wide open. And I thought, you know what, son, this is acceptable now, but in a few years it's not going to be acceptable. I went to a presentation with him on Wednesday morning. He's in grade four now. Walk in, flies wide open. And I go, son, this is why we had that talk, right? And we're worried about competence. We want our children to take care of themselves, to show independence, to show autonomy. And for us, it's important that this be a characteristic that we hope that they will demonstrate not only when they're children, but again also when they're young adults and adults, and of course when they're parents themselves. The last characteristic, and this is where we're going to focus the rest of our attention today. I found it almost ironic that all of our three speakers that preceded me today used terminology very similar to this notion of self-regulation. It's also known as things by self-control, self-restraint, and self-discipline. All three of our speakers use that terminology, very similar to what we mean here by saying that we hope that our children, and we plan for and are parenting our children so that they are self-regulating in their behavior. Now look again, when we look at the definition of what self-regulation is, look at how it's a feedback. It's about feeling autonomous, feeling competent, and feeling related to those around us. You're already seeing the first two are embedded in that notion of self-regulation. That parent-child attachment, that ability to demonstrate and experience competency, and then this ability to be able to have some independence and autonomy in our lives. And here's, again, when we look at this as a characteristic of healthy child development, one of the things that clinicians and pediatricians and those of us that work with children a lot are finding is that we're seeing children within our clinics, within our on our teams and within our schools that are showing this inability to be able to demonstrate this self-regulation, which includes and is related to what we would call, again, another self-hyphenated word, that notion of self-confidence. They look anxious. They appear as if they're unsure about who they are, so it's an identity issue, and they're also unsure about their behavior, again, related to our talk on sexuality. So when we look at some of the recent research, here's where I want to present to you just some notion on this idea of what's called intrusive parenting. Now again, when you look at this definition here, I can't state strongly enough that I've never met a parent who hasn't found themselves doing some of these behaviors, these manipulative type behaviors, where they try to manipulate thoughts or feelings. All of us have had what I call the Disney World moment. Have you ever had your child have their worst tantrum in the most public space? In the most crowded area, and you find yourself saying things like, you know, we'll take you back to the car and we'll get right on that plane and go home. I mean it. We will do this. These words came out of my mouth to my child standing in the line in Disney World, where our goal is only to, again, manipulate, cajole, in some cases shame our children into obedience. It's not about developing competence here. It's not about developing, you know, this internalized social and self-regulatory behavior. It's about compliance. So I want to, you know, disparage the notion that this is, when we look at psychological control of our children, we're not talking about absolute distance from some of these techniques. The problem is that the literature is saying that for a strong percentage of parents, they are finding themselves using these psychological control techniques more and more as a standard parenting style. And as a result, we're seeing clinically and educationally, we're seeing kids who are more and more anxious about who they are and about their own competencies. So again, there's nothing in this list that here suggests that that we are bad parents, and that's why I kind of subtitled this talk. This isn't just another way to be a bad parent by listing, giving this laundry list of things. What it does, though, is I hope it illustrates to us some of the research that's coming out that says when we dwell on using consistently parenting styles and behaviors that are representative of these techniques, there are certain outcomes that happen as a result of this.